Mary's song, the Magnificat, the song of the angels' announcement to the shepherds, Simeon's song of praise in the temple, the Issues, Etc. book of the month is titled The Songs of Christmas. This new arch book would make a great Christmas gift for children ages 2 through 10. The Songs of Christmas is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. A great stocking stuffer for young children or grandchildren, The Songs of Christmas.
We are not seeking special privileges. The government exempts huge corporations, small businesses, and other religious ministries from what they are imposing on us. We are simply asking to carry out our mission to serve the elderly poor as we have done for 175 years. We are very thankful that the court has heard our case, and we prayerfully await the judge's decisions. Thank you very much. God bless you, and a blessed Christmas.
That's the voice of Sister Lorraine Marie McGuire of the Little Sisters of the Poor. She was speaking Monday outside a courthouse in Denver just after a highly anticipated hearing of the case, Little Sisters of the Poor v. Burwell, by the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, this is not the first time we've heard about this case, and this case has actually gone to the Supreme Court and now is back in the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Why is that? It has to do with freedom of conscience, religious liberty, and it appears that the Little Sisters of the Poor are a bit of a trial balloon on the part of the Obama administration as they push the HHS mandate requiring that even religious organizations, with many exceptions, by the way, even religious organizations violate their consciences and pay for procedures and for medications that they feel are abortifacients. We're going to be talking about that. Daniel Blomberg, legal counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty based in Washington, D.C., will be with us here for the first 10 minutes of Issues, Etc. Greetings and welcome. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, December the 10th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After a conversation with Daniel Blomberg, Dr. David Adams will join us. We're going to talk about various scientific and naturalistic explanations for the parting of the Red Sea. Of course, that movie's coming out this weekend, I believe, Exodus, Gods and Kings, and apparently the movie provides a plausible naturalistic explanation for the parting of the Red Sea and the drowning of Pharaoh's army. How important is that event in Old Testament history, and why is it consistently maintained to be a miracle in the Bible and not some sort of natural occurrence? Robert Spencer will join us after that, director of Jihad Watch. We'll talk about two issues, the Sunni minority in Iraq and the Islamic State. We'll talk about the killing of an American teacher in the United Arab Emirates as well. Dr. Mike Horton will round things off for us on this Wednesday afternoon. He'll take us briefly through the history of the early formulation of the doctrine of the Trinity. It's kind of a messy history, but it's one that the church is simply seeking the proper vocabulary and a way to articulate what the Bible already clearly teaches about the Trinity. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours with questions or comments, 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or the Issues Etc. comment line for our beloved on-demand listeners, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Joining us for an update on the legal proceedings involving the HHS mandate and the Little Sisters of the Poor, Daniel Blomberg. He's legal counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, based in Washington, D.C. Daniel, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's good to be here.
I thought that this case, Little Sisters of the Poor v. Burwell, was already decided in the Supreme Court. Why is it back at the Tenth Circuit?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the Little Sisters, you know, who provide care for the elderly poor, for people that most of the rest of society just kind of walk past, and have been doing it for 175 years. They've been providing for elderly poor for 175 years. Last December, we're faced with the question of we either have to violate our religious beliefs and do what the government wants us to do, or we have to pay millions in fines. At the last second, literally 3 hours before these fines were going to start coming with the start of the new year, the Supreme Court protected them from that and said you don't have to do that. But what they said was you don't have to do that for the rest of your appeal. So that means as long as the case is ongoing and we're having our day in court, we don't have to pay fines to find out, you know, we don't have to basically lose the case to find out if we can win the case, because that's what the government was trying to do. The government was saying, hey, we're going to start imposing these fines on you, and you'll just have to wait and find out, you know, some year or two later if we've been doing the wrong thing, if we've been violating the law. And the Supreme Court said, no. You don't get to impose the fines until the case is over. So that's why we're in front of the Tenth Circuit. We're there to find out if the government can force nuns to violate their sincere religious beliefs.
So give us what the government is asserting here and what response the Little Sisters of the Poor have been consistently making throughout the course of this long legal battle.
So the government is saying, listen, Little Sisters, we need you to sign this form. We need you to sign this form so that we can go to your health care providers and ask them to provide contraceptives to your employees. And we're going to offer them money. We won't do any of those things until you sign this form and let us come to your health care plan and kind of take it over. And the Little Sisters have said, no, you know, we have a sincere religious belief that we can't be involved in the provision of contraceptive and abortifacient drugs and devices. That violates our religious beliefs. In fact, it kind of goes to the core of who we are. We witness to and minister to people at the very end of life, to respect their dignity at the very end of life. We can't have anything to do with something that would take away from and deny the dignity of human life at the very, very beginning. And the government says, fine, well, if you don't do what we're asking you to do, if you don't let us, if you don't trigger the provision of these contraceptives on your health care plan, then we'll fine you millions of dollars.
And the Little Sisters of the Poor, what's their response to that?
Well, they're saying, what the sisters are saying, they've got a number of responses, but most fundamentally they're saying, hey, listen, there's a federal law called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which says you don't get to force us to violate our sincere religious beliefs unless you've got a really, really good reason, and you absolutely have to do it to accomplish that really, really good reason. And you don't have a really good reason, and you have other ways of doing the thing that you want to do. I mean, one of the things that sisters are pointing out is, say, listen, we don't like the idea of the federal government going around and providing contraceptives to everybody and abortion drugs to everybody because we think those things are bad. But that's not why we're not in this lawsuit because of that. You know, the government, you've been doing that for years. You know, Title X and other programs, you provide free contraceptives to people. The reason why we're here is because you're making us be involved with something that violates our core religious beliefs. And so, government, since you have all of these other ways to do the thing that you want to do, you don't have to force us to violate our religious beliefs to be a part of that. And frankly, the government just doesn't have a good response, and that's why they're winning, or rather, why the government is losing overwhelmingly in court.
Is this, in some sense, Little Sisters of the Poor, is this a test case? Is this a legal trial balloon or an attempt to set a precedent with respect to the HHS mandate and how the government can require any organization then? In other words, if they can do it to the Little Sisters of the Poor, they can do it to anybody else.
Well, I think you put your finger exactly on it, and one of the reasons why this is such an important case. Because, listen, sometimes people think, you know, what's going on in these cases is you don't like the government's policy here, and you're just trying to stick your finger in the government's eye. And that's not true. That's not true, because the government's been doing these things for a long time, like I said already. The issue here for all of these different religious ministries that don't want to participate is that they don't want to participate. They can't be a part of that without denying part of who they are. And I think you're exactly right that if in the Little Sisters context, where everyone agrees, okay, these are sincere people who really mean it, when all they're worried about here, the only reason why they're in court is because they can't violate their beliefs. You know, if the government can come to those people and say, we're going to force you to violate your sincere religious beliefs, then not only are all the other religious ministries in jeopardy, but frankly, religious liberty itself is in jeopardy. And this is a very clear-cut case. We have the government on one side saying, I'm going to force you to do something that violates what you're telling me is a sincere and very open and objective religious belief. Everybody can kind of understand why you don't want to be involved in abortion drugs. We get that. We're going to make you, we're going to charge you millions and millions of dollars if you won't do it, even though we've got tons of other ways to do it. If the government can do that to nuns, they can do it to anyone in any other context.
What is the government's view, as far as you can tell, looking at this, their arguments, of religious liberty?
Well, it's a very dismissive one. And one of the things that's really been shocking and really disappointing, honestly, is the way the government has kind of tried to minimize the sisters' beliefs here. They don't call into question the sincerity, because no one can question the sincerity. And they, you know, if the government wanted to, and, you know, there are cases where people come up with religious beliefs that aren't really sincere. They're making it up because they want to get some sort of special benefit. But that's not the case here. No one's getting a special benefit out of fighting the government here. What the government's been doing is trying to diminish the belief itself. It might be sincere, but basically it's stupid. In fact, in their papers, in the briefs they filed in court, they've called the Little Sisters, they said, your beliefs amount to fighting imaginary dragons, which is just a remarkably ugly and dismissive thing to say about anyone's beliefs, but especially people who give their entire lives to following their faith and serving the poor.
Are there two issues here? One kind of general religious liberty, but also when it comes to health care, prescriptions, those kinds of things, and the provision for those things via insurance, freedom of conscience.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this is part of a larger question about whether religious people can take their faith with them to their ministries, to their workplaces, or whether their faith has to be shuttered into the four corners of their church and the four corners of their home. And the Supreme Court's Hobby Lobby decision made very clear that kind of narrow view of religion, where your faith can be a part of you, but only as long as it's a private part and you don't talk with anybody else about it, and, you know, we'll even force religious people out of participating in certain parts of public life. The Supreme Court just rejected that and said that can't be true. That can't be who we are. That's anathema to why we have a United States of America in the first place.
So how many court decisions you made the statement earlier that the government has been losing pretty consistently on this. How many court decisions have been made to date on legal challenges to the HHS mandate, and how would you kind of describe the scorecard, so to speak?
So right now, anyone can go get the absolute updated numbers from the Beckett Fund's website, HHS, that's called the HHS Information Central page on our website. And you can go to beckettfund.org to find that page. And I think the last I looked at it, it's a moving target because courts are ruling all the time, but last I looked at it, we were in the upper 30s on wins, so over 30 courts that had protected religious believers, and just about 5 or 6 courts that had ruled against religious believers. And in fact, at this point, you know, you've got a lot of these cases have lots and lots of believers associated with them, because they'll have come together to file one lawsuit. And so at this point, there have been 750, at least 750 religious ministries and religious businesses protected from the HHS mandate, from being forced to violate their conscience in this way. And only one religious entity in the entire country that has filed a lawsuit, lost the lawsuit, and had been forced to comply. So overwhelmingly, courts are, even if they're not ruling, but they're overwhelmingly ruling for the religious objectors, but even when they're not ruling for them, they're protecting them long enough for their cases to work all the way through court. And the only example where that didn't happen, unfortunately, is in the Notre Dame case, which is currently before the Supreme Court asking for protection.
We have, I guess, then two kind of issues that we need to clear up, and that is, one is the HHS mandate itself. At what point does the government say this was a bad idea? And then the separate issue, I think, is how long do they keep pushing it? Can the HHS mandate remain on paper without the government feeling an obligation to continue pushing it? Or do we, to deal with the government's aggression on this, do we need to, in some legal way, eliminate that mandate?
Well, I mean, the government can solve all of these lawsuits really, really quite simply, actually. They can just say, we're not going to force you, religious believer, to be involved. You know, if the government really thinks it's important and the government wants to set a policy of providing about 20 different types of contraceptives and abortion drugs to people, it can do that. You know, whether that's a good policy question or not, that's a question for policymakers. But that's not what these cases are about. All of these cases would go away tomorrow if the federal government would stop trying to hijack religious believers' health plans and stop trying to force religious believers to be the trigger, to be the person who sets all of this in motion for these drugs to be provided on those health plans.
What do you expect the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals to have to say when it rules on this after hearing oral arguments?
Well, you know, the oral argument went really well on Monday. The court asked a lot of questions. This was not only a very crucial case because the Little Sisters were there, and like you said before, there's a certain element that really raises the level of the case. But there were also two other cases that were being heard the same day, the Southern Nazarene case and the Reaching Souls International case, and they're all religious ministries that were trying to be protected from the HHS mandate. And so the upshot of that is that we had over 2 hours of continuous argument on this issue, and the government was forced to try to explain why exactly, when it has tons of other ways to do the thing that it wants to do, it's forcing religious believers to be a part. And the government just didn't give a good reason. And that came through. The court would ask over and over again important, compelling questions, and the government just did not have good answers to them. The bottom line is we don't know what the court will rule, but we were encouraged by the amount of preparation and care and attention that the court gave to the issue.
So, in effect, the government has yet in any case to be able to give a compelling reason for asking religious believers to violate their consciences, their own internal policies, their beliefs, and really to surrender their religious liberty when the government has a thousand different ways of achieving the goal that the HHS mandate is ostensibly supposed to achieve.
That's exactly right. And you know, there's two elements of this that really make that really clear. Okay, so the first side is the government was willing, as a matter of administrative convenience, to exempt tens of millions of Americans from this mandate because it created something called the grandfathering exemption. And this was to keep the president's political promise that if you like your plan, you can keep it. Right? So because of that, the government set up this rule that said, if your health plan stays essentially the same as it was when we passed the law, you don't have to add in these contraceptive benefits. So that meant tens of millions of Americans were exempt from this. Well, that's not a compelling interest, right? You know, a compelling interest is something like, hey, someone's going to lose their life. Sometimes you have, like, for instance, to use a religious objector case, sometimes some religious believers will object to the provision of certain types of medical intervention for children. And so in those cases, courts have overwhelmingly found that the parents' religious objections can be overridden because if the child isn't provided the stuff, the child will die. And there's no exception for anybody on that, right? Everybody has to comply with protecting the child's life because human life is a compelling interest. Well, here, if it was such a compelling interest, we wouldn't have exempted tens of millions, when it was initially started, over 100 million Americans from having to participate, from having to comply with this scheme. Okay, so that's one side. We know it can't be that compelling interest because the government's willing to exempt like half the country. The other side of it is the government is willing to exempt some religious people, some churches, some what they call integrated auxiliaries, which are just like a type of ministry that's really close to the church, because the government says you're religious enough, and we assume that people that work for you are going to share your religious beliefs. Well, how can you look at the Little Sisters of the Poor or at these seminaries, for instance, that are a part, or these missions organizations that are a part of these cases, and say, you're not religious enough to merit an exemption. You're not religious enough to be protected. And the answer is the government, of all people, certainly can't be making that statement. So they're willing to exempt half the country, and they're willing to exempt some religious people because they think the government thinks they are religious enough, and not other religious people because they think they're not religious enough. That shows the government doesn't have a compelling interest here, and we certainly don't want a situation where the government gets to start deciding who is and who is not religious enough to have their religion protected.
So bottom line, Daniel, what's the legal issue that is in play here with the Little Sisters of the Poor and all of these other HHS legal challenges?
Well, I think when you get right on down to it, there's no question that the religious beliefs that are in these cases are sincere. They're real beliefs, and they're being substantially burdened. You know, the government is forcing – you have a choice between violating your faith or paying millions of dollars, and for most of these ministries, that means losing your ministry or at least drastically contracting it. So we're talking – this is clearly a religious belief that's being overwhelmingly burdened. So the question, the legal question going forward, should be, and often is, well, does the government have a really good reason for doing it? And does it have any other way of doing the thing that it wants to do without forcing these poor religious ministries to violate their faith? And as we just talked about, clearly they do. And clearly they do have other ways of doing it. And clearly they don't have a very good reason for forcing the Little Sisters and other ministries to violate their faith.
Daniel Blomberg is legal counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty based in Washington, D.C. You can find out more about the Beckett Fund at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Daniel, thank you very much for your time. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Good to be here, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to take up some naturalistic, sometimes called scientific explanations, alternate explanations for the parting of the Red Sea and the great exodus of the Old Testament and the crossing of the Red Sea. Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary will be our guest. Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Take a stand for life. Join Issues Etc. regular guests Matt Harrison, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, Robert George, and others for the 2015 LCMS Life Conference, January 22nd through the 24th in Arlington, Virginia. The LCMS Life Conference is held in conjunction with the National March for Life. For more information, click the LCMS Life Conference logo at issuesetc.org. It's your time to stand. The 2015 LCMS Life Conference.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one tons to box trucks and booms. Everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. LutherAcademy.com.